You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are at the Observatorio Astronómico de Calar Alto.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Fran Reyes.
Hello, Richard. Hello, listeners.
Hello. We're going to be joined, or we're going to hear from Daniel Freib, who's had to rush off, but he's had an eventful day. We've all had an eventful day. Fran, we're in your home region, and I must say the weather is appalling. It's always like this.
No, it actually isn't. You know, it probably is one of the few times of the year where we've had this much rain for this much time. But, well, wow. Things happen that way.
Well, it was cold and it was raining, and that helped make for a very interesting stage, I think. We saw a great stage with a great climb up to the finish. We will hear in this episode from Chris Froome, we'll hear from Franco Pellizotti, we'll hear from Max Chiandri with a very frank analysis of Nicholas Roach's performance today. I think we've got other things to talk about as well. You've got bits and pieces. Fran, you were up at the finish. I was at the team buses. I'll tell the tale of the etapa, shall I? Well, we saw a lot of aggression today from Romain Bardet, who was obviously trying for the stage win, and from Orica Scott, who seemed to be launching a bit of an all-out offensive for the overall. But neither moves really paid off for Bardet or Orica Scott. It started in the rain, the stage in Lorca, and the rain continued all day. We finished up here at the, well, the
Observatorio Astronómico de Calar Alto.
Yep, there. There was a 14-man break. Bardet had been trying for a few moves. He got into that one. A few other notable names there. Bob Jungels was there. DeMarkey was there. He's been in just about every break so far. Simon Clark was there from Cannondale Drapac. Matej Morhec, a former stage winner. Giovanni Visconti was there. Igor Anton was there, who we heard from in the podcast last night and won here in 2006. Friend of the podcast, Connor Dunn, was there as well. So he's obviously enjoying his wealth a bit more. They got about 5 minutes at one point. But as they came onto the climbs, Bardet was putting the pressure on, took away a small group with him. At that point, Simon Yates jumped across to the front runners. That was a good move by him. He's a little bit down overall, so he was allowed to go. Got up to the front group with Bardet, and Darwin Atapuma was there as well, UAE rider, who, according to Joe Dombrowski, is a terrible breakaway companion. So I'm not sure if that was the case today as well. Yates then lost contact on the climb up to the finish, by which time the gap was really crumbling. Orica, as I say, had gone hard going into that final climb up to here to the observatory. Froome at the finish said that he was surprised that Esteban Chavez, who started the day second overall, subsequently began to struggle and drop back. And it was Vincenzo Nibali who was really impressive on this climb. He had his teammates at the front. He attacked himself a couple of times, went clear at one point with Alberto Contador. Danger for Chris Froome. Froome had a few teammates, but they gradually got dropped one by one. At the one point, had David Lopez, Gianni Moscon, Wout Poels. But for quite a bit of the climb, only Mikel Nieve was left. So he was a little bit isolated. He looked to be struggling, but with Chris Froome, it's very, very hard to tell whether he's struggling or not. Nibali kept having a go. Nieve had a go too. Apparently he was going for a stage win, but eventually dropped back to help Froome when it looked like Froome was in trouble. But when Nibali really started applying pressure, it was Froome who sort of crawled his way up, sort of like a crab, sort of moving sideways up the climb. I mean, there was a very strong crosswind at that point. Riders were really all over the road. It was a steep climb, poor road surface, a real struggle. And it was just a case at that point of fighting. It was like bare-knuckle fighting, wasn't it, really?
Yes.
And Miguel Angel Lopez, the Colombian Superman, he's known as, went clear. He won the stage. Not a danger overall, really. But good to see him back because he's had a terrible time with injuries from crashes. We'll talk about him a bit later on. Yeah. Froome managed to nab second place, which I think, given that he did look to be in trouble and didn't look to be having a great day, doesn't like this weather, that was a great result for him. Nibali maybe a bit frustrated not to get more out of the day, but a really brutal, brutal stage. A good day too for Wilco Kelderman. He was up there with the leaders and he has moved up to fifth overall. Chavez lost 2 minutes, 5 seconds. Froome now leads Nibali by 1:19. Chavez third at 2:33. David de la Cruz, one of the very unlucky riders today, punctured and, you know, still sits fourth overall and looked strong after puncturing when he was trying to get back. So unlucky for him. Calderman up to fifth. Bad day for Adam Yates. He lost over 9 minutes. Davide Villela still king of the mountains, and Matthew Trent is still the points leader.
You done with the tale of Tapa?
Yeah.
I am very disappointed because when you told the names of the breakaway, you didn't say my two favorite ones.
I didn't say everyone.
You didn't say everyone.
Edited highlights.
Yeah, but wasn't it a highlight to have Antonio Pedrero, my favorite rider in the race?
I didn't know he was your favorite rider.
Yeah, he's my favorite rider on this race, and he's again on the breakaway. He's an impressive guy. And also, the young Colombian climber, Adelmar Reyes, a really promising GT prospect with a cool surname, riding for racing for Manzana Postobon.
Well, listen, as I said earlier, it's hard to tell with Chris Froome when he's suffering or not. And I was actually watching the stage with some people from Team Sky, and I can tell you, they don't know either if he's suffering or not. He drifted to the back of the group. He said that's because he didn't want to get involved in the attacks and so on. Mm-hmm. And we have seen him before ride climbs at his own pace and even get dropped and come back. He didn't do that today, but he didn't look particularly happy. He did salvage second on the stage, so it counts as a very, very good day for him. Let's hear what he had to say at the finish. Here is Chris Froome.
Yeah, for sure the race has changed today. I think you just have to look at the general classification to tell that the race has completely opened up now. It was a very different kind of race today. It felt as if we were in the maybe spring classics in April, March, April time, with this kind of weather. Certainly not something you expect in the Vuelta a España. But yeah, we're all in the same boat. We're all in the same position. So we have to make the best of these circumstances. And I think today the weather made the race even harder, especially with the summit finish over 2,000 meters. It was a very, very tough stage. And as I said, I think the gaps on the general classification show exactly that. When Orica made the race at the bottom of the last climb, I think a lot of people were already on the limit. And when the attack started with Alberto and Vincenzo halfway up the last climb, then the race exploded completely. For me, I was very fortunate to have Gianni Moscon and Mikel Nieve with me for company. They've both been incredible during this race. My whole team has been incredible during this race. Just controlling all day. It's been the dream scenario for us this first period of the Vuelta. And today, I think we can take a lot away from today as well as a team. I think it was a very hard stage. We had to control the start. We had to control the race right up until the base of the last climb. But the team has been fantastic. The second part of your question, asking about Gianni Moscon, I think at that moment when I was speaking to him, I probably said to him, don't worry too much about Alberto and Vincenzo attacking. It was still over 10 kilometers to the finish, and with two teammates and a lot of road still to cover, we didn't need to chase them absolutely full gas. So, but this is Gianni's first Grand Tour, first experience really riding GC in this GC group with me. So it's been a great learning experience, I think, for him, and it's been certainly for me. I'm extremely happy to be working with such a talented individual like Gianni. He's got a huge motor and a huge future. You mean in the last 2Ks, or? Yeah, I think certainly today wasn't my cup of tea, given the conditions out there. I do prefer the really high temperatures and when everyone's on the limit because of the heat, and today was almost the polar opposite of that. But as I said, everyone's in the same boat, and we all have to make the best of the situation. I think the team managed really well today. Up the final climb, once that split was already made, I decided to sit back a little bit. I didn't want to get roped into pulling on the front and playing a sort of cat and mouse game with other guys who were there. So I was happy just to sit back, and I think they stood to gain more today. Guys like Contador, guys like Nibali, guys like Kelderman, they stood to gain more today than me. So I sit back and left them to it. Mikel Nieve, in the final, there was one moment I said to him, have a dig, go for it. He's not on the general classification, so maybe they weren't going to chase him. But yeah, the race did just open up again, and Frosty's—he's an incredible teammate, absolutely incredible. And it's such a privilege to ride with a guy like Mikel Nieve, just so professional, so consistent, and one of the strongest climbers in the peloton.
Well, it's interesting to listen to Froome's recollection of the facts of today, because he says that he told Mikel Nieve to have a go. And according to Alberto Contador, what Froome actually told Nieve was to ease up, to lower his speed. And that's why, in theory, Contador tried to be aggressive at different moments of the climb.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why Froome must be such a hard guy to race against, because, you know, he does have bad days. He does have off days. We saw it at the Tour de France, Périgueux, and he said later on, after the race had finished, that was the other's opportunity to attack him. And had they attacked him, they would have dropped him. But the problem with him is the signs are so hard to read, because he always looks like he's suffering. He always looks like he's in trouble. And I say, his own teammates don't know whether it's a sign of him being in trouble or not. It's impossible to tell.
Yeah.
This is a very clever bluff, in a way.
Exactly. He looks like if he was constantly bluffing. Contador thought that he was having a bad moment. Mm. And when Spanish journalists addressed Chris Froome on this, they asked specifically whether he had any particular moment of weakness during the climb, and he said no, categorically, no, I didn't have a single bad moment.
Which suggests that he did. You know, methinks led off protest too much. He's not going to say that he did, but I think he will later, at some point later, say that today was a very hard day. I mean, and I think what got him through in the end was just sheer grinta. I think that was just, it looked, the finish there just looked like, you know, guys absolutely on the limit, giving everything that they could. It was a really, really hard climb up to finish, made much harder by the weather, you know, the cold, the rain, the wind. It was a tough old stage. And the guy the one rider who is he's unpredictable, and he's certainly not afraid of Froome, and he's not afraid of a go, is Vincenzo Nibali. And Froome said at the start of the Vuelta that Nibali was the big threat here, he believed. And Nibali, you know, well, let's hear from his teammate Franco Pellizzotti from Bahrain Merida, who said a very interesting thing at the finish. Here is Franco Pellizzotti, who was very, very active, very involved in that final climb.
Yes, today is the first stage, very important for this Vuelta. And Nibali stayed very well. And all team stay very well. Today start the Vuelta for Bahrain Merida and for Nibali for the red jersey. But sky is very strong. But Madrid is 2 weeks to Madrid, and it's possible. Hola.
So Pellizzotti there saying, Fran, that the Vuelta basically started today for Nibali and for Bahrain.
Yeah, after all, what we've seen today is a completely change of scenario compared to what we saw in the past 10 stages. We passed from nice weather, lumpy courses with sharp uphill finishes to high mountains. We have several stages like this in this Vuelta. This one, starting today, then we have Granada, then we have a stage in Asturias, in Cantabria. It's completely different efforts, and above all, and further on, this weather today made it terrible for everyone. And as for Vincenzo Nibali in particular, he just seemed to excel in these conditions, on high mountains and also with this terrible weather. It seems like he suffers better
his contenders. Well, remember, 2014 Tour de France, where he really laid the foundations for his win, was that dreadful day in northern France across the cobbles. Awful weather. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? A guy from Sicily does really well in bad weather, and a guy supposedly from Ireland, Nicholas Roach, suffers in weather. As we'll hear from his sports director later on. Somebody else I saw at the finish, the one he's going to tell us a little bit more about Nibali, was the one and only Daniel Freeb. Daniel, you had a bit of a Yates day today, didn't you?
Well, we punctured.
Yeah,
it was good change of it. It was quick. It was about half an hour. Do you know what? We punctured right outside the Spanish equivalent of Quick Fit.
I'd like to know why you didn't change it yourselves.
We weren't going to do that. Would you have done that?
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
I'm
going on a spare.
Napalm and I had a puncture in the Jaguar a few years ago. Couldn't mention it at the time because we were sponsored by Jaguar, but we changed it and carried on.
What, and you rode on a spare?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
It's true.
For how long? But then you still needed to go and take it to a garage eventually.
The whole stage, and then we got it fixed afterwards.
It's amateurish. We were on rough roads, as you know, Rich. It was a mountaintop finish. That would have been the strategy of complete amateurs. And we're not amateurs, we're pros.
Okay, so much for that. You made it to the finish. Yeah. Beautiful, isn't it?
It's beautiful. I've been up here before. It's another climb I've ridden on a folding bike.
Is this to plug one of your books again? Are you doing one at night?
I can't remember which one it was in. I think it was in the first of my books on mountains. Anyway, been up here before, but it was very different weather that time. I came up in March last time and it was really hot. Well, 20-odd degrees. It reminded me, do you know what, on the side that we came up, so there are effectively three or two and a half sides to this climb, and we came up the main way that the race didn't go, and very wild, not much vegetation, certainly at the bottom. It reminded me a bit of the Highlands of Scotland in the light today. So it was very grey, wasn't it, a low cloud, and sort of green scrubland most of the way up.
This is like the Lecht, which is probably the road you're referring to. Beautiful climb in Scotland, but it can be pretty bleak, and it felt pretty bleak today, cold. And watching the race, it was pretty brutal out there with the wind and the cold, and you could tell everybody was in a bad way. Chris Froome's just walked past us to his press conference. It was hard to tell what sort of condition he was in, as it often is with him. What did you make of Vincenzo Nibali today? His teammate Pelizotti said that the Vuelta started today for him in Bahrain.
Well, he's not in a very good mood, Nibali. He's been quite difficult to deal with on this Vuelta, I must admit. A few of us outside of his bus at the end, or a little camping car at the finish, didn't want to talk. So I'm not talking to you lot of all people. But he's growing into this Vuelta, isn't he? And it just shows that with different climbs, a different type of climb, the whole game changes, really. And he's much more at home on climbs like today's longer, sort of alpine-style climbs. I think he's generally, his form is getting better. And he looked like he could pose a bit of a threat to Chris Froome today. He didn't really punch much of a hole, did he, when he attacked towards the top of the final climb. But there was daylight. And I think he was, the main reason he didn't want to talk to us was he was very disappointed that he didn't win the stage.
Barely daylight, it was pretty dismal. Why is it, you mentioned this the other day as well, Nibali's been in a bad mood with the media. Why is that? Is there a reason? You know, has he got wind of the shark's tail, perhaps?
I don't know. He's just been very spiky, which is uncharacteristic of him. And there is one Italian journalist here, which is amazing. We were talking in the car the other day about the magnitude of a race like the Vuelta, the number of people all across the world that are following it, you know, whether it be on social media or conventional media, and there is a single representative of the Italian media here. It's one journalist from the Gazzetta dello Sport. His team, Nibali's team, of course, Bahrain, have very international interests, so, and you know, there are plenty of international journalists he could talk to if he wanted to. I mean, he is, that's not to say that he's blanking us or stonewalling, but he's not been the easiest to deal with.
Well, you've got a long drive, haven't you, Daniel? I hope your tyres hold out.
Me too. Was this a good idea? We got a used tyre put on the a pre-used tyre. We couldn't stretch, the budget couldn't stretch to a new one. That was going to be about €109. The used one was about €30. I thought that was a good price.
It's a gamble, isn't it?
It is a big gamble, but you know, it'll make the journey a little bit more exciting.
You don't gamble on tyres, do you?
I don't know. I'm not very au fait with all matters four wheeled, and we're not very good on cycling tech, let alone automobile tech. So, yeah.
Good luck.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits, and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. We were very grateful today, Fran, weren't we, for our little Rafa jackets. Kept
impressive
us warm.
Impressive jackets.
I wasn't sure whether you'd get to wear it, but it certainly came in useful today.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't get wet. I was completely warm for the whole day. Oh, marvelous jacket.
Great. Listen, thank you to Rafa. You can buy our Rafa-produced cycling podcast gear, Pedal de Charme gear, at rafa.cc or at cyclingpodcast.com. Go to the shop. And on the subject of Pedal de Charme, we will be, of course, awarding Pedal de Charme again this week. Nominations, please. Give us your nominations for Pedal de Charme for this week. I'm sure there are a few contenders out there.
Okay. If I have to go with one rider, this would be David de la Cruz. He has been terribly unlucky, and still he's showing some really strong legs that would place him in the podium. He not had this streak of bad luck.
Potentially, we're going to talk about De La Cruz. You had a comment to make. Daniel and I were talking about Vincenzo Nibali. You had a comment as we were listening to that about his brother Antonio.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see Varane Maria today in pretty good shape. I mean, they looked even better than Orica that tried very interesting offensive that finally didn't get the expected result because Chavez did fade. It failed a bit today, but Barry Merida did very well. Antonio Nibali.
About time they did something. I mean, Antonio Nibali was quite impressive, wasn't he? Yeah. He was sort of going toe to toe with Gianni Moscon on the climb for a bit, and I think there's a bit of rivalry there. You know, I think there was a bit of there was no way that Moscon was going to swing out of that line while Nibali Jr. was there, and going a bit wide in that. For all that Froome said afterwards that he and Nibali had sort of settled their differences, there's no love lost at all between Nibali and Froome. There's a real rivalry there, which is good and gives the race a bit of an extra edge, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now, we should really talk about today's stage winner, Miguel Angel Lopez, because he is he's a great talent, isn't he? He won the Tour of Switzerland last year. And we thought he was destined for great things, but he had a terrible crash at the Vuelta last year, and he's had a lot of bad luck. And he's come back, and this is his first Grand Tour stage win. And he's clearly back to full health.
Yeah, you know, he's had many crashes during his career. But by what I've been told, that his team suspects that it is not only due to pure bad luck, or to a lack of technique and bike handling, but because he is not completely comfortable within the peloton. He has raced very few times here in Europe. You know, you can count his race days in Europe and are probably less than 100. And for during these first two seasons in the World Tour, they have allowed him to do his thing, to spend a lot of time in Colombia getting ready and coming in straight away to land victories in Europe. But from next year on, what I understand is that they are intending to give him a more intense racing schedule. Do you know why they call him Superman?
Here we go. You haven't done this for a few days. Why do they call him Superman?
Because when he was 16 years old, they tried to steal his bicycle. Some street robbers, and he defended himself. He got actually a knife.
Some kryptonite.
Eh? No. It was on daylight, but he got a knife actually on his thigh. A knife.
He got stabbed. He got stabbed in his thigh.
He got stabbed in his thigh.
Yeah.
But he managed to keep his bike.
Wow.
And that heroic defense made him deserving the nickname Superman.
Superman, indeed. Well, I mean, he's not a million miles off overall. You know, there's still a chance that he could climb up a little bit in the overall standings. He's up now to 10th overall, so he's there. And the rider one place behind him is Nicholas Roach, who who began the day second and has been riding exceptionally well. We mentioned this last night that it was a priority of ours to go and speak to him. And apologies, we did have an email about this reprimanding us for not discussing Roach's move yesterday to claim 30 seconds on the others. How and where did he get away? Well, we didn't really know, if I'm honest. The TV footage wasn't great, and we didn't really find out adequately at the finish. So apologies for that. Today wasn't the day to go and catch up with Nicholas Roach because he had a very bad day. And I mentioned he hates this sort of weather. I did speak at the finish, however, to his sports director at BMC, Max Chiandri. Here is Max Chiandri. Hard day out there, I think, for everybody today, wasn't it?
Yeah, hard day. It's one of them days, you know. We're lucky at the end, actually, it didn't really rain, but I don't know if it would have changed much or not. You know, I think it's a very much of an individual race. I mean, at least that's what we had. You know, we had our guys after 4 or 5K when the race kicked up, and we just had them individually divided by 40 seconds, and it just went all the way to the finish.
I mean, Nicholas, despite having Irish roots, he's a big fan of the heat, isn't he? Does he struggle in the cold more?
Yeah, well, just this morning he said yesterday I did my best, and it was kind of wet, you know, and he got that extra 30 seconds today. This morning I was like, you know, put a vest, cover up, good oil on your legs or whatever. But he said, the cold. He already slightly mentally, he said, and I apologized in the bus 3 times. I said, listen, Nico, you're doing your best here. You don't have to apologize. And if you suffer the cold, it's normal. I mean, there is people what do suffer cold and wet days, and he's one of them.
I mean, Nicholas and TJ have ridden really well up to this point. They've had a bad day today, but they're clearly in good form. What do you want out of them now from this Vuelta?
The form is there. I mean, I think now I just want to look at GC a little bit with Yvonne and Jackson. We just kind of look at where we are, take it in, and then just, you know, we can play differently, you know. That doesn't mean we cannot try and move, look at brakes, but I think it's slowly, everybody's going to look at that little garden or big garden and try and do the best, you know, and that's what we're going to try and look at all things. Obviously, you know, we have Sky and Froome there on a slightly or different planet from us, you know, so we're just going to have to try and get our best.
So Chiandri there with, well, quite an honest assessment of Roach's ride today. Disappointing. I mean, fair to say that up to this point he's been riding well above what a lot of people expected, but I wouldn't, as I said to Max Chiandri there, one bad day doesn't mean that his form has vanished. He's clearly in very, very good shape, and as the weather gets better again, he loves the Vuelta. I mean, he rides very, very well at the Vuelta traditionally. You know, maybe he's not out of the overall picture completely. He's 11th. The question now is, does he battle on to try and finish in the top 10, or does he maybe try for a stage win instead?
Well, so far he has proven to be at a very good shape, and above all, he has been riding in a pretty wise manner. You know, I wouldn't rule him out for GC. He always loved to contend for GC on this race, so he probably keep on.
He does, but that's frustrating in a way. It's frustrating for a lot of people because a stage win is surely worth more than 7th or 8th on GC. I mean, he's 11th now, but that's, you know... Anyway, that's a perennial debate with Nicholas Roach in particular.
Also, Van Garderen had a pretty bad day on this.
Van Garderen as well, yeah. I mean, yeah. They've both been riding well, BMC and the BMC riders, and, not a good day for them today in the rain and the cold. We are releasing 3 episodes of Kilometre Zero a week at the Vuelta. Very excited about Friday's Kilometre Zero, Fran, because it's one you've been working on about your local climb.
Yeah, that's my home roads, the roads I have been riding for 3 years there in Granada, Sierra Nevada. The experience I've lived there, I have tried to portray it on a Kilometre Zero. And because of that, you are going to have like 20 minutes, out of which 10 are me breathing heavily as I climb up Azayanas, Mona El Purche, and La Olla de la Mora.
And we reach, that's Sunday, isn't it? That's Sunday's stage, we go there.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't let that put you off becoming a friend of the podcast and receiving access to our Kilometre Zeros and all the other Friends specials that we've produced this year. Today's Friends special was with the photographers. We spoke to some of the photographers who work on bike races to get a little behind-the-scenes perspective from them, find out how they work. And it was quite an entertaining listen. Let's hear a little excerpt from it now.
You're listening to Kilometre Zero by The Cycling Podcast.
Hello, I'm Simon Gill, photographer, the one that doesn't normally speak. Carl Pilkington of The Cycling Podcast.
Not sure I'm cut out for this.
That's all going in. No, Simon. Simon, what makes cycling... What makes cycling a good, a photogenic sport?
The auditorium is enormous. Unlike a football match or something, you're confined to a small space. Cycling, you've got often over 200 kilometres of options to photograph the race. So there's a lot to think about. And scenery-wise, it's just... Well, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Become a friend of the podcast to access 11 exclusive shows for just £10. To sign up, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Hello, my name is James Morton. I'm the head of nutrition for Team Sky. I'm also a reader in exercise metabolism at Liverpool John Moores University. And last but not least, the world-class knowledge director for Science in Sport. My interest in sport nutrition really, I guess, stemmed from my experience as a PhD student. And I guess really what sparked my interest was that you could put people through identical exercise programs, but just slightly change the nutritional stimulus and the muscle behaves completely differently. That blew my mind back then, because quite often we think of intensity and duration as the most important part of a training program, but actually simply changing what you're eating before, during or after exercise completely changes how the muscle adapts to training. And so it really traced back to those early studies, and then I thought over the last 10 years that's where I really focused all my efforts as a researcher, really. I played semi-professional both in England and Northern Ireland. I played for Northern Ireland Schoolboys as well. But like many of us, I wasn't good enough to make it professionally. But one thing I was always committed to was training hard. And so I've always been interested in fitness and diet and nutrition from an early age, really. That's what sparked my interest to do a sports science degree. And then I really got interested in research. And I guess then the next best thing to not being an athlete is actually working with elite athletes.
So I'm Catherine Brown, and I'm a performance nutritionist working within British Cycling, employed through the English Institute of Sport. And my main role with British Cycling is to work with the endurance squads and the mountain bike squads to improve their nutrition to help performance. I guess for us, that's always the question, is how do we measure that a change in nutrition has actually led to a change in performance? And I guess that's where it builds into what the athlete's program is. So we would look in terms of where they need to improve. Is there a physiological reason for a change in their nutrition strategy that makes sense, that would make a difference to performance? But ultimately, I think trying to measure whether a specific strategy has led to that performance increase is quite a difficult thing to do. And probably we're part of a bigger team, so a lot of what we do will be linked in with the strength and conditioning coaches. So a performance limiting factor might be muscle mass. We would play a big role within that process of that strength and conditioning coach would prescribe the right training program for that. We would prescribe a nutrition strategy to help maximize that gain, and hopefully that increase in muscle mass might lead to that performance. I think in sport in general, that if there's a heavy emphasis on weight loss, there's always a risk in terms of eating disorders. I'd say from my experience of working with these riders, I wouldn't see it as a huge issue within the elite level, because we give them the support to do that effectively. And it comes back down to the education of the rider and what they're implementing to know what the risks are and ensure that anything is done appropriately.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
We heard their little feature from our sponsor, Science and Sport. And we're very grateful to Science and Sport for their support. And as well as backing us here, they are offering, of course, 20% off to all our listeners. Go to scienceandsport.com and enter the code CPAUG20. Even though we're almost in September now, that should carry on
working.
Summer
is finishing.
Well, it feels like that, certainly. My goodness. I think we're going to get nice weather again tomorrow, aren't we?
Not really.
No?
Not that much. I mean, a bit nicer, but it is not the full Andalusia's weather.
Certainly isn't. This is most unexpected.
Yeah.
I must say, a lot of our colleagues came unprepared for this, judging by what they were wearing. I think they could,
and the lack of umbrellas.
I think there could be illness sweeping through the press room, I think. Any other, you, as mentioned earlier, you were up at the finish, Fran, quite a distance from there to the team buses. I decided to wait among the team buses, just see what I could pick up there. Any other business from the finish?
Well, first, let me thank friend of the podcast, Xavier Arteche, coach of Team Sky, for picking me up at the finish line and driving me here to the press room, because otherwise I probably wouldn't be here. But, you know, looking for water somehow in the middle of the mountain.
He's a coach at Team Sky, Basque. And he's been at Team Sky for a few years, and you know him pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I know him back from the Caja Rural days, and yeah, pretty nice chap and listener, according to what he told me today. So
and what, according to what he told you?
He's a frequent listener of the cycling podcast.
Oh, he's a listener, yeah, he has said that, yeah, and he's been on the podcast as well.
So besides that, David de la Cruz, I would like to elaborate and correct you.
It's good to correct mistakes in the episode in which the mistakes are made. This is a new precedent for us, yeah?
Yeah, because, you know, factual accuracy hasn't been our strongest point in this Vuelta a España.
Never is, Fran.
But what I learned today at the finish line, what actually happened to David de la Cruz was not a puncture, but a problem on his rear derailleur. How to pronounce
derailleur.
It? Derailleur, okay. And the rear derailleur.
That's what interrupted his ride and
put him on the back foot for the rest of the climb. Still, I was very impressed to see how strong he was today and how strong has been during this whole Vuelta. I always thought that he was going to be a contender for GTs at some point of his career. But to be honest, in the last years, I had lost a bit of that hype, and I thought that he was going maybe to become a great deluxe domestique for some rider. And in that sense, in that respect, the fact he's signing for Team Sky for next year was matching my perception.
You can see him just stepping into the role that Mikel Nieve currently fills. He's off to Orica Scott, of course, for a lot of money, apparently.
Yeah. So, but in this world, I'm starting to believe that he can really contend for the podium, and it would be very impressive. Besides, I read today an interview on Catalan newspaper Ara, on which he told that that next year, apparently, Chris Froome doesn't plan to ride the Vuelta, and he may have a chance to lead Team Sky there.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I asked Froome whether he was going to ride the Vuelta if he won this one, whether he'd, you know, come back and try and win it again. And he sort of hinted, I picked up that he sort of suggested that he would like to ride the Tour of Britain at some point in his career, and maybe next year would be the year to do that. Who knows? That's interesting. I'm sure De La Cruz is not the only one at Team Sky who might fancy leading the team at the Vuelta. Froome isn't doing so. Wout Poels is another one. That's always the problem, isn't it? I mean, did you say there that you don't think he can contend for the podium here?
I think he can.
Yeah, he's fourth.
I think he's fourth. And he has suffered bad luck for
and
a couple
a good,
of times.
That good time that trialist, isn't he? Decent time trialist.
Decent time trialist. You know, and he suffered that crash in crash while climbing in Castellón. He suffered this rare derailleur mechanical problem.
He crashed warming up for the team time trial in Nîmes.
Yeah. And after all this, he's still fourth. He can go a long way. And you want another business from the finish line?
Another observation, yeah.
Yeah. unfortunately, I saw a very unpleasant incident. Gilles Vallée, a ruler for Lotto Soudal, that crashed heavily in the first week, and as a result of that,
well, we spoke to him a few days ago. Yeah, he was really, exactly, really struggling.
He was struggling with back pain and so on. When after passing the finishing line on Calaralto, he stopped maybe 50 meters past the finish line, was there taking some breath, drinking water, so on. And a team car stopped just nearby him, very close to him. And unfortunately, somebody opened the car door, the back car door, and its edge hit Vallée on the chest. He almost collapsed in that moment. He fell to the barriers. It created quite a buzz
there in the finish line. He was hurt.
It seemed that he was...
It wasn't his own team car.
No, not his own team car, a different team car. And...
You're not revealing the team.
No, I don't want to put a stain on anyone's name, man. I want to think that was something unfortunate.
It was an accident.
Yeah, it was on purpose.
Well,
for sure.
That's the last thing he needs. You know,
yeah, and it was quite heartbreaking because after he recovered, it took him a while to recover, and after he recovered, he began pedaling down to the team buses. And he was crying like a baby. He was crying, and I could tell that he was crying out of exhaustion and desperation. You know, it's quite tough to have these kind of circumstances thrown at you after you have been 6 hours under the rain on full force.
Absolutely. It was, yeah. Is that how long today's stage was? My goodness, I'm just looking. It doesn't actually say 5 hours. Five hours. A 5 hour stage in that weather, that takes it out of you. And today's stage might have an impact, you know, because people will have suffered today, and you know, it might, there might be people fall ill and stuff like that after a stage like this, because when the weather changes so dramatically, it can be hard for the body to deal with that. So this stage was a tough one, and Froome said at the end that this, you know, we're still relatively early in the race, but this is one that will at the end, when he looks back at the race at the end, will have been an extremely important one, perhaps a key one. Anyway, let's leave it for tonight, Fran. We'll reconvene tomorrow with Daniel again. We've got a long drive ourselves as well now, haven't we?
Yeah.
You're going home.
I'm driving home. I'm going to spend the night at my parents' home in Berja, beautiful town in Almería, also known as Penny Lane. And I am so looking forward to do that, although it means that we have to drive for 2 hours.
Also known as Penny Lane, did you say?
Yeah. Penny Lane.
So we should play out with you singing Penny Lane.
No. Someone said that hearing me singing is unsettling, and since I am getting some kind of reputation as a singer, a songwriter, I'd like to play it live.
Another time. Yeah. In the meantime, thank you, Fran.
Thank you, Richard.